A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
The great thing about Dartmoor is that it's a huge place, and so although we've been here before on Folk on Foot, we've never been to this part of Dartmoor, and this is the north of the moor, and I'm just standing on a little incline looking out over the most spectacular view, and we're here to visit a Bronze Age stone circle, which has mystical qualities by all accounts, and which nestles in a fold in the moor, and to meet two amazingly talented musicians. Philip Henry and Hannah Martin, otherwise known as Edgelarks, have created a unique brand of music fusing the English tradition with American influences. And Philip is a masterful guitar player, but they're both multi-instrumentalists and they both sing, and Hannah writes the lyrics for their songs. They were the best duo in 2014 at the Radio 2 Music Awards, and they've made their home in this part of the world. And so it's a joy to be going on a walk with Edgelarks. Hannah and Phil, good morning. How wonderful to see you. It's actually a lovely morning here on Dartmoor, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hannah, where have you brought us?
So we're here at Scorrell Stone Circle. We're not quite at the Stone Circle yet. We're at the car park, but we're going to walk down to the Stone Circle.
And what is the Stone Circle?
Well, it's an ancient monument. It's quite mysterious. It's one of those things a bit like Stonehenge, when no one's really sure why it was built, but it's pretty special.
Right. Let's get walking.
Yeah.
Let's get moving. Now, you are carrying an enormous number of instruments. Well, actually, you're not carrying an enormous number, Hannah.
No, yeah.
Phil. Phil, have you got three guitars there?
Well, there's a tenor guitar, a banjo and a resonator guitar. Two of them are Hannah's and one of them's mine.
And you're carrying them all?
I'm carrying
them
all.
A lot?
I'm carrying the baby changing bag.
Yeah,
because one of the most exciting things that's happened to you in lockdown, well, possibly the most exciting thing that's happened to you in lockdown, is having a baby.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And she's with us. She's walked ahead of us with your mum.
Yeah, she's with my mum, Barbara, ahead there.
What's her name?
She's called Rosa Kitt.
And how old is she?
She's 5 months old, so... Yes.
So you're looking remarkably well on it.
You don't
look like you've been getting plenty of sleep. And
well, no, that's clever lighting.
And sunglasses.
Yeah, sunglasses. Permanent sunglasses these days, yeah. We've just taken her on her first ever tour in the last week with some amazing touring grandmas helping us out. But she's done really well. She's actually fantastic.
Does she respond well to seeing you on stage?
I don't know how much she's aware when we're on stage.
Last night would be the first time when you played with Miranda at Sidmouth.
Yeah, because she's usually asleep. She's a good sleeper. Yeah. But she's been at a lot of rehearsals and she definitely seems to like music. She sort of lies in the middle on the floor and watches us very closely. Keeps a good eye on us while
I'm guessing
play.
She was exposed to quite a bit of music during your pregnancy, was she?
Yeah.
Just a bit, yeah.
Quite a lot. We recorded a whole album, actually.
At home?
Yeah. In fact, she's even on the album.
I slipped a 12-week heartbeat recording of her into one of the tracks.
Yeah.
Wow. Kind of hidden in the background.
If anyone can actually spot it, then they get
a big prize, is there?
There is a prize, because it's subtle.
Yeah. So just tell me more about this walk, because we're heading uphill now. Is this a place that you come to a lot, or is it special to you in some way?
Yeah, it's quite a significant place for us, really. It's it's somewhere we've been coming probably for the last 13 years or so.
Yeah.
I've been coming to Dartmoor my whole life, but this particular spot I didn't know about until a friend said, oh, have you been to that particular stone circle? And we came up here and ended up taking photos that became the album sleeve for our album Mind. And ever since then, we've come up fairly regularly for walks, and we often camp up here as well. It's a good wild camping spot. So.
And I can guess that there's going to be an absolutely amazing view
from
when
we get to the top here,
because yeah. It's already opening up
yes.
to our right across the field of sheep.
Yes, I love that about Dartmoor. You wiggle through all the lanes and it's quite sort of enclosed and woodlandy in the lower part, and then you finally come out onto the open moorland and you get this sense of space and enormous landscape.
And are you a local?
So I'm originally from Brixham on the south coast, so not far away at all, and we now live in Exmouth, so yes, we are locals, but Phil's from Lancashire.
I am, yeah. I've lived in Devon close to 20 years now. But I don't think I would be classed as a local by other Devonians.
No, you are. You're definitely
naturalised. I think it takes longer than that.
It's an incomer.
Oh, I don't know. I think you're a local.
Okay.
You qualify.
Thank you.
So how did you two meet in the first place?
Well, we met through music. I think it was a music night in Exeter, wasn't it, when we first met?
Yeah.
By a mutual friend, a singer-songwriter. We both ended up playing backup instruments at a music night, and then we went on to form a band
called the Roots Union with Tobias Ben Jacob. He plays in a duo called Jacob and Drinkwater now, you may have heard of. They're excellent, and we had a really fantastic few years touring around with the Roots Union with Toby. We did lots of Glastonbury gigs, and we went to America, and it was great fun. But when that band sort of naturally came to a close, me and Phil had started playing as a duo, so.
And we carried on. We had a bit more of a mutual appreciation for traditional music than the rest of the band as well, so that kind of led to us forming a duo.
And did the music come first, or the personal relationship?
Music, actually.
Yeah.
I'm guilty.
Well, you had a boyfriend when we met.
Yeah. It's all coming out.
Yeah. So you were professional colleagues first?
Yeah.
And then partners afterwards?
Yeah, we both got recruited to the band, you see, so yeah, spent a lot of time touring together.
And what have been, I'm interested in both your roots into music in the first place. I mean, Phil, what was your starting point of getting into music when you were much younger?
Well, I'm a self-taught guitarist, and started playing when I was 15. And I got into music via my best friend's dad's record collection. Basically, we were raiding his vinyl and his homebrew and discovered some great music from the 60s and 70s, which became a kind of core of my musical taste.
What sort of people were you listening to?
Initially, kind of the Beatles and Hendrix and that kind of stuff. And then later kind of looked into the more acoustic roots of that music, and I got heavily into the Delta Blues and early blues recordings and that kind of thing, which I've kind of specialised in now, particularly with the slide guitar. And also Davy Graham and Bert Jansch and those guys. Davy Graham definitely ahead of his time in terms of being a great kind of world music musician, a very eclectic taste, incorporating traditional music from the British Isles, but also all over the world, really. So they're very inspiring.
And so that inspired you to take up the guitar?
Yeah.
Do you remember your first guitar?
Yeah, it was an electric guitar. It was a white Stratocaster, kind of Hendrix-style guitar, yeah. I don't have that one anymore, I don't think. But yeah, I moved away from electric guitar into acoustic guitar quite early on, really, and kind of find that's where my home is, really, on the acoustic.
And I think you spent some time in India, didn't you?
I did, yeah. That was in 2008. I got Arts Council funding to go and study with Pandit Debashish Bhattacharya, who's kind of considered to be the best slide guitarist in the world. So that was studying Indian raga music on the slide guitar, living in Calcutta with his family, and yeah, a great time.
Well, tell us more about it. You know, what did you do every day? Did you get up and have lessons, or?
I got up at 5 o'clock in the morning and practiced for 5 hours.
Five hours.
Then went and had breakfast, which was a curry, and then we had a lesson with Debashish, and then back to practicing for the rest of the day, really.
You were doing like 16-hour-a-day practices, weren't you?
I managed to clock up some hours there, yeah. It did me a lot of favours. I thought, I've come all this way, I'm going to make the most of it, so I really put the hours in.
Well, that is amazing dedication, though, isn't it? I mean, yeah. What made you able to focus in that way? Because a lot of people would have been distracted, not just presumably from the music, but also because by the surroundings, you might have wanted to get out there and explore.
Yeah, it's quite a daunting place to walk around Calcutta on your own, so I was quite happy to sit in the room and practice. But at that point in my life, I was determined to become one of the best slide guitarists I could possibly be, and I was very, very motivated. I wish I had that motivation these days.
And what did you learn from him? I mean, I assume it's impossible to sum up in a sentence, but what influence did he have on the way you played the guitar?
I think the best thing I learned from him, the most important thing, was he made an important point about how you can tell a story with melody. You don't necessarily need words, so you can, if you arrange notes and you take the listener on a journey, you can basically tell a story just through playing the notes, and the bigger the story you can tell, the better player you are, if you will. So kind of a different approach to improvising and playing melodically.
So it's the psychological learning that you took away from him, your attitude of mind when you're playing, as much as the technique and the way you put your fingers.
Yeah, probably equal both, really. A lot of great technique as well, but a philosophy and just a different way of approaching music, really, was one of the biggest thing I got from him.
We stopped here on top of the moor on the way to the Stone Circle. I wonder if you might... Would you play something for us here?
Yeah, we can do, yeah.
That would be wonderful. So, in addition to the three guitars, you've got a banjo, Hannah.
Yeah.
And a fiddle?
Yes.
Yeah, this is fantastic. You brought your harmonica?
I've got a couple, yeah.
Couple of harmonicas.
This is actually travelling light for us.
Though. Is it?
We've stripped it back, haven't we?
Yeah, well, I've only brought one guitar. I usually bring six.
And this is just such an amazing open spot on the crest of this hill, and you can see for miles and miles and miles away to the north, and it's actually a rather lovely day. The clouds are here, but there's plenty of blue sky and a bit of sunshine breaking through, and just to the right of us the moor stretching out with the shadows of the clouds moving across it, and it's a great spot. So what are you going to sing for us?
We're going to sing a song called Old Adam the Poacher, and this is based on a tune collected on Dartmoor called Old Adam the Poacher, and it's quite an unusual tune for these parts because it changes mode halfway through, and it caught my ear because of that. And we used to live in this funny old barn with this beautiful view out across the River Exe up onto the moors, and I would sit there playing this tune wondering who Old Adam the Poacher might have been, and it turned into this song.
And are there lyrics to this song as well? You put lyrics to it?
Yeah, I wrote the words, yeah.
And are they about this place?
Yeah, so they reference various different bits of Dartmoor myth and legend. So I was imagining who Old Adam might have been, and I suppose in my head it became he was sort of the spirit of Dartmoor in a kind of environmental sense. And I was thinking about the kind of regenerative power of nature. in the end, I think, as I was writing.
And some of the myths as well of this area?
Yeah, so Tamara and Tavy is a myth about how the rivers were formed in the west of Dartmoor.
Tamara was a nymph, wasn't she?
I think so, yes, but you're testing me now, because I wrote this a while
giant.
Ago. Yes.
I've been reading about this.
Ah, you have,
yeah.
Yes.
And it was all about the two giants, Torridge and Tavy.
Of course, yeah.
Wooing Tamara.
Yeah.
Unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
And her father forbidding it and turning her into a river.
Ah, there we go. See, I knew that when I wrote this song, but I wrote it some time ago now.
let's hear it.
Okay.
Wonderful. And what a wonderful place to sing it. Have you ever sung and played up here before?
When we took the photos for our album cover of Mind, we had our instruments with us, so I think we played a little bit, but no,
yeah,
we've not done that song here. It actually
just
felt lovely.
Convincing, didn't we, when we were doing the photos?
Yeah.
We've definitely never played that up here, so that's a great experience.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, let's put the instruments away and keep walking, shall we? Because I want to get to the Stone Circle.
While the sun's out.
So we're just coming over the brow of the hill and we can begin to see the Stone Circle here, can't we? It's sort of hidden in a dip.
Yes, it is. I'm not sure if that's... Well, I assume it was a deliberate thing about the people who built it, but the approach is slightly odd. Like, when you're down there, you can see the whole landscape around you, but from a distance, it's quite hard to spot the stones. You just sort of have to know how to find them.
And Hannah, what about your route into music? We've heard quite a bit about Phil. So when did you take up music?
Well, my parents just always loved music. They didn't have any kind of musical training themselves, but they listened to a lot of music. So I think I remember very early on in life sitting listening to Bob Dylan and Joan Baez and Fairport Convention and Steel Eye Span. And I remember particularly loving the words and the stories in, you know, the really long folk ballads. And then they always took me to Sidmouth Folk Festival, actually. So I got exposed to a lot of folk music early on too, which clearly had an influence. And so as I grew up, I started learning the violin, and I knew, well, my parents knew a wonderful Brixham folk singer called Maggie Duffy, and she started taking me along to sessions when I was quite young.
And when you say you started learning the violin, was it the violin or was it the fiddle
that you were learning? Well, I had violin lessons at school, and so that's the kind of classical...
So you did sort of grade one and grade two and all that.
Yeah, exactly. But then through Maggie, really, and getting into the sort of local folk club scene, I suppose that's when I learnt about the idea of a fiddle and improvising, and that was where I found my real passion lay. So that was what I ended up pursuing much more. Yeah, so a kind of a more traditional route into folk music in many ways, running sessions and playing tunes in pubs.
And was that unusual in your peer group?
Yeah. Because some of my school friends used to be like, yeah, why do you go and hang out with all these old men in pubs? But as I got more and more into music, I met more and more people. So then I ended up with lots of contemporaries who were into the same things as me as well. So, you know, it's a very sociable thing, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. But it just always interests me as to why more young people don't get into folk music, and you know, whether it's just that they're not exposed to it, or
I think it is. You have to find the sort of the gateway in, and I was lucky that I had parents and their friends who kind of gave me that opportunity, really, because it is so much fun.
And while you've been talking, we've walked into the middle of the stone circle, and there are a lot of stones here, actually, aren't there? I'm not going to count them all, but I mean, there must be about 30 stones still.
Yeah.
Standing in the circle at varying degrees of height, some of them about waist height, some of them a bit higher, one particular pointed one, which suggests that they might have been bigger when they were first put here. Do you think, Phil?
Quite possibly, yeah. Yeah, quite a few of them are lying down, aren't they? So it's quite hard to say. But yeah, that one is much bigger than the rest, so must have some significance, I think. What we normally do when we arrive here is we walk round the outside once and then come in by the big stone. We're not quite sure why we do it. It's
like
just
a little ritual
that we
Well,
do.
Let's do it then. Okay. Let's do it. Just your way of greeting the place.
Yeah, it feels like there's a sort of significance to the place, and it feels like important to kind of acknowledge it in some way, really. Yeah, I'm not sure how this ritual evolved, but it's a nice thing to do.
Yeah. And also, there's something about the way you should walk round a church, isn't there? There's a particular direction you're supposed to go round it.
Oh,
church,
yes,
I
because
think.
It's Widdershins.
Widdershins, like isn't it? Yes. Yeah. So I don't know if we're doing that now, but we're showing respect to the ancient people who put these stones here on the moor.
Yeah.
By walking the circuit.
Yeah, it feels like asking sort of some kind of permission to be part of the landscape.
And you can imagine how awe-inspiring it could be here, either in fair weather or foul.
Yes.
You know, if a storm came in here, you're very, very exposed.
Yeah,
and
you're...
you could see the power of the gods or of nature in tooth and claw, really, here, couldn't you?
Absolutely. Well, we have been here in fairly bad weather, and you certainly can, yeah. You're kind of in the centre of this bowl of hills, really, and it's all very, I suppose you could say, bleak and exposed moorland, but it's also so colourful. The richness of all the different grasses is... I don't know, there's a certain warmth in it, isn't there? It's not just bleak.
But there's no shelter.
But no, there is no shelter.
There's a little bit of a pine forest away in the distance, but this circle is on its own. Some of the stones lying down. I always just feel when I come to a place like this how extraordinary it is to connect yourself back through thousands of years.
Yes.
I was talking to an archaeologist about the joys of his work, and he said that, you know, the amazing thing is to visualize the people who had been in that spot for thousands and thousands of years.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I enjoy that sense of perspective that it gives you. Like, you know, we're just a flicker in time.
Bit of a blip.
All the worries that you might have are, in the general scheme, quite insignificant. And what have we actually built that will last?
Yeah, I think we're safe to go in now.
Okay, we've been round. We'll go in. And perhaps you could sing for us here.
Yeah.
There's a song, isn't there, which was inspired by something that happened to you here?
Yes. Yes, there is. I found a feather in the middle of this stone circle, and it's an extraordinary looking feather. It's sort of brown, black and white striped, but with this reddy orange kind of thing up the side, isn't it? And I put a picture of it on Facebook once I'd found it and said, does anyone know who this feather is from? And it's like my most popular ever social media post, just hundreds of replies of people saying, oh, it could be this, that and the other. And no one could conclusively say where this feather would have come from. Lots of theories of exotic birds that had got lost, or, you know, things that had been bred for people to hunt on the moor and that kind of thing. And several people were, oh, I'm so sorry, we can't solve your mystery. But I decided, actually, I love this idea of a mystery, that there's things out here on the moors that people haven't really pinned down yet. So that's what the song's about.
Sometimes we don't know where a feather's from. Sometimes we don't know where our hope belongs, but sealed in its mystery lie days of skylit flight. The places that we go to in our dreams. The kite is a revenant returning to the wing. I cannot count the miles of his brave westering, but perhaps he flew much further than the last time that we met, and left his token here in the west. Feather in the dark.
Amazing, absolutely amazing. And there's that wonderful sort of synthesis of something very English and something quite American going on. Is that a sort of conscious way you arrange the music?
Possibly just our influences finding their way out, really, rather than deciding it's going to be that way. But
I think it's important to both of us to have that sense of rootedness and our own identity rather than imitating another culture or whatever, but we have got so many influences that they definitely play a huge part in what we do, don't they?
And when you put the banjo in,
yes,
you know, that adds another kind of sound that makes it sound a little bit American.
Yeah.
When did the banjo come into your life?
We were on our way to America, actually, with that first band, the Roots Union, and we stayed with a friend, and he'd just bought a banjo. And I'd only ever seen the ones with the big backs, you know, the big bluegrassy banjos before, but he had one, in fact, the same one that I now have too, which is more like an Appalachian style, good for frailing, so that sort of strumming technique. And it's a bit of a gentler sound, I think, so I really liked it for that reason. And yes, I fell in love with it that night staying with our friend Steve and bought myself the same one.
Sometimes it's a bit Marmite, the banjo, isn't it? You know, you can
yeah.
find that it divides opinion.
There are a lot of banjo jokes.
Do you know one?
No, I blocked my ears against them.
Phil, you've got one of these resonator guitars, which...
I have, yeah.
That's got a sort of resonator built into it where you would normally have the sound hole.
That's it, yeah. There's a metal cover plate on the front of the guitar. You'll kind of recognise the image of them from that famous Dire Straits cover, Brothers in Arms. But underneath that cover plate, there's basically a speaker cone, and it's a mechanical amplifier. The vibrations of the strings get transferred through the bridge into the cone, and then the cone fires them back out again. So there's a way of making the guitar loud enough to compete with the volume of fiddles and banjos back in the day.
Or barroom chat, presumably, you know, if you're yeah. playing it in a bar in New Orleans or wherever. And there was no amplification, no electric amplification.
No, this predates the invention of PA systems, so yeah.
Is it an old guitar?
This one's not that old. It's made by a local maker, actually, David Oddy, who sadly passed away a few years ago. But it's made to the specifications of an old National.
Fantastic. So where are we going to go to now?
I think we're going to head down to the river. So just over there, there's a beautiful river that meanders through. Once you get over there, you'll see that the landscape actually changes quite a lot.
Let's go.
I think your mum's seen it.
Yeah, I waved her on, it's fine.
I must say, your mum's incredibly patient looking after the baby, and the baby's incredibly well behaved.
Yeah,
we're
lucky.
Up there on the hill, just away from us.
Yeah, my mum's an excellent tour nanny. But we are blessed. Rosa is a very well behaved baby thus far.
So we're going along a little cart track that cuts through the middle of the stone circle, a sort of rutted cart track which must have come after the circle
yeah.
was abandoned or left. And a fine herd of, a picturesque herd of cows on the right.
Yeah, I think it's easy to, somewhere like Dartmoor, it does feel like wild and spectacular, which I love about it, but it's easy to kind of de-people the landscape, and actually it's a place full of people, really, full of people's lives, and quite industrial in places, mining. And we did that very long walk, didn't we, out near Widgery Cross, out to the, were they mining stations, very far from the road.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like maybe we shouldn't forget those people who live very harsh lives out here. And I guess maybe this cart track has something to do with that.
Are you natural walkers? Phil, do you walk a lot?
We do, yeah. It's one of our favourite things to do when we have the time. We've walked a lot in the Lake District, up in Scotland, in the Cairngorms.
And here, yeah.
And we did a long walk across Dartmoor, didn't we, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, the Mary Michael Pilgrim's Way. It's a west to east kind of route, taking in lots of special sites, isn't it?
Yeah, we took the backpacking tent and it was great.
So you slept out on the moor?
Yeah, we did, yeah. Yeah, a couple of nights.
What was the highlight of that experience for you?
Finding the pub at the end. It was, yeah, I didn't sleep particularly well. We bought two very, very small child sleeping bags by accident from a guy in Mountain Warehouse who gave us some bad advice.
So you had one on each leg?
Yes.
Pretty much.
It was a real error, that one, on that particular trip. But it was a fantastic walk.
And what is it about walking that you like?
I like the kind of chance to sort of think about things, I suppose, without distraction. But it's not that the landscape's not distracting, but you can kind of, if you walk far enough, you sort of end up just being a part of it rather than having all the worries of home life kind of descending on you.
Yeah, once you get into the walk properly, the kind of everyday thoughts start to leave you. And you kind of get a clarity of mind, I guess, that how to get doing other things. A great way to relax, really, isn't it?
And do you find musical ideas come to you when you're walking?
Yes, definitely. A couple of years ago, we went up to the Lake District and exchanged a gig for a week in a beautiful cottage in a very remote spot in the Duddon Valley. And we wrote a whole album while we were there and did lots of walking. and I'm sure that the two things went hand in hand.
Yeah.
In fact, we walked from Great Langdale to Wasdale Head, which kind of takes you right over the tops.
Technically the highest pub walk in the UK, because it walks between two great Lakeland pubs, so that was a good walk.
It was fantastic, and we wrote the whole album in the week after that, so I'm sure that the walk contributed.
Yeah. I often carry a harmonica around with me as well when we're walking, so I've written a few of my harmonica tunes whilst on the move. There's one that I do called Coniston Water that I wrote in the Lake District, for example. Yeah, I think we'll play a bit of harmonica in a minute.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I think I'm probably generally always have a song in my head in some kind of a way, actually.
Yeah, there's a certain rhythm to walking, isn't there, that is musical.
Like work songs and everything, it's always been a feature of music to help people do their activity, like the walking songs for doing wool in Scotland and that kind of thing. It's all about the rhythm, isn't it?
So we're just picking our way down into the valley here through the heather and gorse bushes on some small paths. The river is in sight.
So I think the landscape really changes, because once you're down, you can't see the stones from here, and suddenly you're in the sort of the dip of the river, and there's lots of sort of little trees, and it feels more like a kind of glen, and it's much kind of warmer, cosier landscape, I think.
And the bracken's coming up here, isn't it, around the river?
Yeah, yeah.
And we can see the little pine wood over there on the hill.
Yeah, stand of trees. We usually, this is where we would come to camp, just across the river, and then there's this dry stone wall, and you can pitch up next to that and get some shelter from the trees when the weather comes in. And you can swim in the river when the weather is hot, which has happened.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's like a bit of wild swimming.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I came up here with some friends, actually, on the trip where I found the feather, and it was like 30 degrees. It was ridiculous. And so we all swam in the river, and it was fantastic.
Yes.
Yeah. Although I did get a tick.
There's always a drawback, isn't there?
Yeah.
And their romantic vision of the country life. So we can start to hear the noise of the river, the sound of the river rippling away down in the bottom of the dell there. So the river's fast flowing here and going through a lot of rocks, so you can sort of see the rapids going past us. But there's this extraordinary shaped stone.
Yes.
What is that?
I think it's called a Tolman stone, and I assume it's just a natural phenomenon, but it is a beautiful thing. I have been told that it's often been used as a sort of fertility rite, so you're meant to climb through this big hole in the stone.
Well, I thought it cured your rheumatics.
Well, maybe it does. It probably does it all.
But it's got this massive, naturally occurring hole right through the middle of the stone, hasn't it? And
yes.
It would be quite a feat of gymnastics if we were to climb through it.
Well, I think we have both done it, haven't we?
Yeah,
it
I've been through
over
there.
The water.
Was that before or after you had Rosa?
Before, so it worked.
QED.
I can demonstrate if you like.
Oh, yeah, should we do that?
Yeah, I'm not going to demonstrate, but
yeah. Yeah, Phil, that would be wonderful if you wouldn't mind. Are you thinking of having any more children? I don't know if it's an intimate question that you want to answer at this point.
Keeps the options open, doesn't it?
So Phil's just climbing out now onto the Tolman Stone, and the river's running furiously past below. Are you all right to go in?
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
There's another big stone at the bottom that I can climb down onto, so I'll do that now.
Okay, so it's a big round hole and he's dropping through, but he's going to have to hold on with his hands. It looks more dangerous, I think, than it is, because it looks as though he's dropping straight into the river, which I don't think he is. There's a stone below and he's just managed to limbo round. And limbo back. Come through, sir. Come back out of this massive stone, some patches of lichen on it, and a little pool of water has just gathered in one niche there on the stone, where you can see what might be the beginnings of another hole going through. And I assume it must be the power of the water that has worn that hole away, that allowed Phil to go through and improve his fertility. So, Phil, you've got the harmonica out, well, two harmonicas out now.
Yeah.
And you've got this beatboxing technique that you do with the harmonica. How did that develop?
Yeah. It kind of spontaneously happened at a very difficult gig in a nightclub in Exeter on New Year's Eve once. I was playing a gig going on after a 16-piece soul band with just a harmonica and a stomp box. I found that I needed some extra sounds, and these beatbox sounds started to come out. But I later refined it. I made friends with a really great young beatboxer called Vid Warren, who sadly passed away. And we exchanged skills. He taught me how to beatbox properly, and I taught him how to play the harmonica. So that was how it kind of developed from
there. So you do it around the harmonica. You use your mouth to create the percussion around playing the harmonica.
That's it, yeah. Because when you're breathing out and in whilst beatboxing anyway, you're breathing out for the bass drum and in for the snare drum. You can just direct that breath stream into the harmonica to get a bass drum and harmonica at the same time. And then I usually slip the snare drum in on the in-breath there, and then back onto the...
That's fantastic. It's like having a whole drum kit here, isn't it?
That's it. It's cheaper than a drummer, and it doesn't answer back.
So you're going to play a song which is very appropriate. We've been talking about walking, and it uses the beatbox technique.
Yeah.
What's this song?
It's called Wander. It's kind of about many things, in a very loose way, about walking. It's about finding your place in the world, and song of community and welcome, and how I think you don't necessarily have to be born somewhere in order to end up belonging there.
Left the west when the war led him to Rome. His children, they forgot the tongue that's been their father's home. The shapes of words were broken by the city's endless road, and the lines of accents spoken told their stories no more. But it's not about your blood or the mud around your bones, but the toil of your hands and the seeds they've sown. The roots that you dig when you make your home, for feet were made to wander. I have a love for the land that I've known, for the trees and the fields by the sea where I've grown. But I believe you should choose where you dig your home, for feet were made to wander. From the land, they forgot their tongues, forgot the sun on their backs. They did not know their brothers, so how could they lend a hand? They did not know themselves, so how could they make a stand? But it's not about your blood or the mud around your bones, but the toil of your hands and the seeds they have sown, the roots that you dig when you make your home. For feet were made to wander. To wander. I have a love for the land that I've known, for the trees and the
you dig your hole for. Feet were made to wander. Feet were made to wander. Feet were made to wander.
Never let it be said that men can't multitask. Yeah, can
exactly.
I just say? Because watching Phil do that, what he had two harmonicas on the go. So he had both his hands up at his face with one of the harmonicas. One hand would go down, produce the other one out of his pocket, switch them over in mid-note, and then do the percussion section, and then come in on the backing vocals. You're worth your weight in gold.
I try my best. I'm flying the flag for male multitasking.
Exactly. Yeah. That was absolutely brilliant.
Thank you.
Did you have to work really hard at those skills? Again, like your 16 hours practice that you were doing on the guitar, did you have to work like that on the harmonica?
I put some time in, yeah. Maybe not quite the same as what I have for the guitar, but yeah. Whilst you're in the car driving, you can practice beatboxing, actually. So you can use the hours productively.
Yeah, how does that work if you're in the car with him?
I'm shaking my head.
And of course, Hannah's contribution was enormous in that song. She was playing the fiddle and singing. But, you know, you must be constantly upstaged by him doing all that jiggery-pokery.
I don't mind, it's brilliant.
So we come to a much quieter part of the river now, where I think this is probably a little tributary going into the main river, and there's a family just wandering past over there. I can see them with the three children and the dog, and I suspect they're going to have a picnic just by the river. What great spot for it. When you're working together, I'm interested in this, I've asked several couples who work together how this goes. I mean, I think it's just because when you find a good accompanist, you marry them, or you get into a relationship with them. But are there tensions in being life partners and work partners as well?
I suppose there can be. I think we're lucky, really, aren't we?
I think we're lucky.
We have a good kind of balancing set of skills.
Yeah, we're quite opposite things, really, because I tend to write the songs, and certainly the lyrics person. Phil has an amazing musical kind of production brain, so you're brilliant at taking the sort of the skeleton that I've got and making it into a proper piece, fleshing it out. I think we'd both really miss those complementary skills, you know.
And we have a laugh as well. You've got to have a sense of humour if you're in a car for 9 hours together regularly.
On tour, yes, yeah. And so the acid test of all of this would have been the lockdown, presumably, when you're locked down together. Some people said to me, well, you know, we couldn't make any music, you know, when the lockdown happened. We were so sort of disorientated by it, we stopped making music. But I think you went the other way, didn't you, and started making an album?
Yes, we did. We definitely felt disorientated at first, but suddenly realised a couple of months in that we'd been given this gift of time, which is something we've always been very short of on tour. And I think the starting point was really having the idea to start exploring more traditional material, because I wasn't feeling hugely inspired for writing, to be honest, with all the uncertainty. And our surnames are Henry and Martin, and so for years when we've played in folk clubs, people have said, oh, so you must be going to learn the folk song Henry Martin then. And
which
I'd never
a
had a chance.
Song.
Yeah, exactly. I'd never had a chance, but I knew that it was in a wonderful collection that I look at a lot of local songs, Songs of the West, collected by Baring Gould. And so I got the book out and I read the music and started making this arrangement, and Phil kind of went, oh, well, that sounds quite nice. And it kind of spiralled from there, didn't it, into an entire album of traditional material.
And where did you record it?
In our second bedroom, which is the studio, in inverted commas.
The Brazil room.
It used to be...
Why is it called the Brazil room?
Because when we moved in, it had the most horrific wallpaper covering all the walls. Enormous blow-up black and white photos of Brazil, Rio de Janeiro, apart from in neon green and yellow, the colours of the Brazilian flag, picked out at random. So we got rid of that quite swiftly, but it is the Brazil room.
Yeah, but we used various parts of the house, actually. Did some recording in the bathroom, some under the stairs. And I used, we've got, it's a Victorian terrace, very high ceilings, and we've got a very high stairwell. So I used that to capture some reverbs and that kind of thing. So I basically converted the house into a recording studio, and simultaneously converted my garage into a brewery as well. So I had quite a good first lockdown.
And what were you recording under the stairs?
Vocals. Made right. Quite a nice little vocal booth. Intimate vocals.
I didn't like being in there very much, actually.
It's a bit claustrophobic, a bit Harry Potter, isn't it?
You know,
recording under the stairs. Well, will you sing Henry Martin for us here? Tell us about this song, Henry Martin.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, so, well, the history of the song, there are lots of different theories, but the one that Baring Gould says, he collected this song in several places on Dartmoor, and he thought that the song was originally about a pirate called Andrew Barton, and the name had morphed into Henry Martin, just in the oral tradition, the way it does. And this pirate had been around in the time of Henry VIII, and apparently is a true story of a Scottish pirate who raided some of the king's ships. And I don't know how it got to Dartmoor, but obviously it stuck around here and people remembered it and kept telling this story. So yeah, now we're telling it.
Phil and Hannah are now on a bridge over the river. It's rather an epic sight to look up at you there on this bridge, which is it's not a very big construction. It's just like a fallen stone has gone across the river, and I'm sure there'll be trolls and things like that underneath it, don't you think, that'll come poking out?
Almost certainly.
Yeah. It looks like that kind of bridge.
How far, how far, great. bowstring strung both in. I'd soon hang him up to his middle yard and have done with Henry Martin.
That was wonderful. Thank you very much indeed. The midges have come down now to attract us. And as you were playing there, just behind you, there were a pair of swallows just whistling round by the pond just behind you there.
Yeah.
Amazing. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing your songs with us and sharing your stories with us. It's been an amazing experience. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thanks.
Philip Henry and Hannah Martin, otherwise known as Edgelarks, taking us to the Skorrell Stones. Well, if you've enjoyed this episode, there are loads more episodes for you to explore in our back catalogue. And we filmed all the music that Phil and Hannah made here today and added it to Folk on Foot on Film, which is our amazing archive of more than 100 songs recorded on location during our travels. If you want to see that, you need to become a patron of Folk on Foot. Make a small monthly contribution, which goes towards paying for more podcasts, and then you can look at that archive and explore it to your heart's content. To sign up, just go to folkonfoot.com and click on the Support Us button. We'd really appreciate your support because we rely entirely on our listeners to keep us on the road. So please sign up if you can.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.